Welcome to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesh and Beck Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesh and Beck Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesh.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley. We appreciate you being with us. Our show is brought to you each week by Flesh and Beck Law. Their number 303-806-8886. And Mr. Kevin Flesh joins us in studio. How are you, sir?
I'm good.
Good. Can you smell the turkey?
Yes.
Hard to believe, man.
It is unbelievable. Gosh. And we're getting into that time of year where fall is just great. I just love fall.
Yeah.
I've just decided that it's probably my favorite season. I mean, I know that summer's nice, and the winter, you know, we do stuff up in the mountains and that sort of thing, but you can't beat fall, I don't think, right, for all the stuff that we like to do.
Sure.
And
now, you're an early riser.
I am.
So, do you like it being daylight?
It's
early, and would you rather, I mean, do you like, which way do you like it?
So, The change this time of year, falling back, is much easier for me. In fact, I get up, I have a tendency to stay on that same schedule. So for a while, I'm up really early because the time change, it just works out better for me and my rhythm. So,
right.
Coming up, it's just one of those things where I like it being a little bit lighter a little earlier, because mm-hmm. when the midst of winter, you know, when we get the winter solstice, sure, in the 21st or 22nd of December, whenever that is, and the days are as short as they're going to be, it's dark for a long time when I get up. I mean, it's amazing.
That's, and like, we say, as a Victoria go, it's 6:15 and it feels like 9:15.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah,
right.
Geez. Exactly. And so, yeah, it's very interesting. The spring is harder for me because you spring forward, and then I feel like I really lose that time because it's even earlier and it takes my body a while to adjust. But this time period when it changes, it's not nearly as hard for me, and it really helps with hunting and other things, quite frankly,
sure,
because I'm able to get up a little bit earlier and it doesn't feel so bad, and get out there and do the things we like to do. And you know, what's interesting is with my practice, as clients have begun to realize that I'm in the office early, and mm-hmm. they'll start emailing and doing other things, and friends, and
sure,
you know, everybody knows that I'm up early. So this time of year in particular, they're like, jeez. In fact, I've got a case that I just finished up with, and the lawyer is a night owl, and he was talking about, geez, it feels like I just went to bed and I start getting texts or emails from you early morning. And so we've talked about that, because he likes to do things at 11 o'clock at night, and I've been asleep for 2 hours. So it's pretty humorous. And in fact, my household, the same thing. So my kids, they're not early risers,
right,
of course, because they're teenagers. And so lately, you know, I get into the office early, no question about that. And so I don't see them in the morning before they go off to school. And it's been like that forever.
Yeah.
And now they're working, and they're working until 9 o'clock at night, a couple nights a week. And so I don't see them at night. And so my one daughter got accepted to a college yesterday, and we kind of discussed it back and forth via email and text, but I never have actually spoken to her live about it, so it's pretty humorous. Hopefully tonight we'll see if she's around and I'm able to talk with her about it. So
absolutely,
all fun stuff for them.
Absolutely. Well, again, our show is brought to you by Flesh and Beck Law, and once again, the number 303-806-8886. All right, some interesting events this week. This Kyle Rittenhouse trial. Wow.
So this is why I love to go to trial,
yeah,
because if people can watch what happens in a courtroom, and hopefully you have been watching this, because, you know, we have lots of things that are televised these
mm-hmm.
days, the congressional hearings and all of that stuff, boring, right? I mean, the majority of it is boring.
Yeah.
This trial is not boring.
mm-hmm.
And this is real life sort of litigation that goes on. You've got the personalities, you've got the prosecutor, who I assume is sort of a star prosecutor in either Kenosha or Milwaukee or wherever,
right,
this is going on. He, you know, for the most part, you see him sort of unflappable, but at the same time, he's making some mistakes, and the judge is really upset with him, almost saying, you're being unethical.
Yeah.
What you're doing is not appropriate based upon the rulings or the lack of rulings that I had. Because one of the rulings that the DA was sort of trying to get into some of this prior conduct, which is this 404B conduct mm-hmm. that we've talked about, I think, in the past, but just to remind people of, is sort of before you can present evidence to a jury about prior bad acts of the defendant, you have to have a hearing about it, and the court has to make the balance of whether or not that evidence is going to be unfairly prejudicial to the defendant and whether or not it's going to be relevant for the current trial that's going on, the current okay. allegations. And so in this case, I think the court sort of held off, but said he was leaning towards not allowing this evidence to come in. And to not really talk about it until the court made a decision after hearing all of this other evidence. And so the court in this case, the DA basically started going right into it. And the judge, you know, so you've got to think about the perspective of the judge in this situation and even defense counsel a little bit. So the judge wants to have a fair trial. I mean, they're really motivated by being fair, making sure that the process is constitutionally fair to the defendant. Mm-hmm. At the same time, understanding the alleged victim's family and all of the pressures that are going on there. He's got possibly 13 people, maybe 14, depending upon how many alternates they have. But it's definitely 12 individuals who are going to be making a decision about this case. And lots of scrutiny because it's a classic yeah. self-defense case. It is, I mean, it's really unfortunate, but this is what we talk about all the time when we talk about these gun cases mm-hmm. and using your gun in a situation where you fire a shell at another human being.
Right.
Human being is going to die, most likely. And that's what happened in this case. And so we see all of the dramatics relating to the defendant is testifying. Almost always the defendant has to testify in these sorts of cases, mm-hmm. in my opinion, because they have to explain. First of all, you want them to get to know, you want the jurors to get to know the person that pulled the trigger. You want them to understand what their thought process was and whether, you know, especially in this case, because the defendant seems like, Mr. Rittenhouse seems like a decent human being, young, sort of impressionable, but comes across, at least what I've seen thus far,
yeah.
as an individual who, could he have been a little bit fast on the trigger? Probably. Could he have probably handled the situation differently? Probably. But does he have the constitutional right to do what he does because of what's taken place? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the day, the prosecution, and remember this, Kenosha in Milwaukee, Kenosha is a pretty good-sized suburb of Milwaukee. Okay. You're in an urban area.
Okay.
So we're not dealing with, you know, like in Colorado, we're not dealing with a situation where we're either on the western slope or the eastern plains where you've got a small community. It's like Aurora. I mean, maybe not quite as big as Aurora, but it's got that same sort of dynamic. And
okay.
so you've got that same sort of jury panel. You've got urban jurors. Same time growing up in Wisconsin, you've got lots of folks that I'm sure have involvement with guns. So you're not in the heart of Milwaukee where you've got really urbanites. It's a little bit more outlying. It's like having a trial in maybe Castle Rock or Arapahoe County maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got a little bit of mix, and that's what I'm guessing is on this jury. I haven't seen the jurors.
Right.
But it's a really interesting dynamic because, you know, what are we, 7, 8, 9 day trial? What was interesting to me about what the prosecution was doing and what I thought from the standpoint of being a criminal defense lawyer is this prosecutor's pushing it because he knows he's got some tough sledding.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular with regard to this particular witness, it's always hard. In this case, I think that the defendant, Mr. Rittenhouse, did talk to investigators and did make some statements early on. But the best witness for me is a really good defendant. And where they've made no statements to anybody. And so the prosecution has no real basis. They don't know what they're getting into, and it's really dangerous for
mm-hmm.
them. I'll give you an example. I had a DUI trial years ago in Adams County. My client was going down the road, and his vehicle was sort of moving in different lanes of traffic. Weird situation. Officer pulls him over. Well, he and his girlfriend are having sexual relations in the front seat of the car. When the officer shows up, she's naked from the waist up. just bizarre situation. But that's what was going on I-76 in the middle of the night. So the officer then questions my guys whether or not he's had any alcohol. My client has said, nope, haven't been drinking. We were at a baseball game earlier in the night, had a few beers then, but nothing else since then. So the officer thinks he has enough for probable cause, charges my client with driving under the influence. My client's father was a police officer, and his father told him never to take a breath or blood test. They're all fixed. I don't agree with that, but that's what his father had told him, and so that's what he did. But when they asked him to take a test, he said, nope, I'm not taking any tests. Didn't say anything further. So we go through the process of litigating the case, and we end up at trial because they won't dismiss the case because I don't think they have enough to prove he was guilty. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a crazy situation, careless driving, certainly, maybe even reckless driving, depending upon how you look at it, but not under the influence. And so he gets up on the stand, and young prosecutor, I've already had him testify. I didn't ask him why he didn't take a test because I thought it would lead me into a situation where it looked like he had made it up. You know, because what's the likelihood that you have a father that's the police officer and right. tells you not to take a test? It just sounds really sort of unusual. Prosecutor, though, wasn't smart enough to recognize defense counsel's not asking him why he didn't take a test. Maybe there's a really good reason, but it feels uncomfortable to the mm-hmm. defense lawyer. The DA asks the question, and the client says this is why. And then the DA has no way to refute what the client just said. So the jury was out literally 5 minutes, came back not guilty, because they believed him. They believed what he said was true, and they probably, in my initial questioning of the jurors in the voir dire, I knew that this may be an issue. So I asked them if they were skeptical of the tests, and we had a conversation about that. So I sort of set it up, not expecting the DA to make that sort of conversation with the defendant on the stand, but he did. So afterward, the DA said to me, he said that was probably not a question I should have asked. I said, yeah, I'm sure you won't ask that question again. Right. Because other people that I've sort of counseled through that process, you know, have made things up, and I knew that they were making it up. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know whether my client was making it up or not, but I knew that's what he was going to say, and it wasn't something I wanted to touch because it looked weird. So the same sort of thing is happening with this DA, I think, in Wisconsin, in that he wants to make any negative point towards this individual he can, and it's a little too aggressive. And I think it's probably going to backfire on him.
Yeah,
well, wait and see.
I know, it's interesting.
Super interesting. And it's fun. I saw the interaction. So here's a good example of why jury trials are so interesting. When you see them in video and when you see them in person, you see that human beings are the ones running these courtrooms.
Sure.
And that they have, I mean, you could tell the judge was trying to keep as much of his anger as possible in check, but he was really upset with that prosecutor.
Yeah.
And so he calmly asked the jurors to leave for a few minutes and go back in. And then they have it out, you know, and he still is on the bench and he knows he's being televised. So he knows that he's got to watch. But his comments were, if they would have been sitting at a bar or if they would have been sitting somewhere where it wasn't recorded, the judge would have said, you're not following the rule of law. And I really think that you're being disingenuous to everyone. Mm-hmm. And you're lying. You're just making things up to try to cover your case. And
when he looked at him and said, I think the prosecutor said something to the effect of, in good faith,
right.
basically, and he said,
no way.
I don't believe you.
Yeah.
That's got to be a bad feeling for a judge to look at you and say that.
I don't. So, and that's part of the things that, I think he called him a seasoned litigator right. or a lot of experience, some sort of experienced prosecutor or something like that. You never want to have a judge question your ethics in a courtroom, ever. Because if you do, you know your case is lost for the mm-hmm. most part, unless you have a really good client or something else that the judge can sort of put aside their bias towards you. And that's right. something that I always stress to clients, and it's something that I've always been very cognizant of, is that you always want to make sure that the decision maker believes you.
Right.
Even if they don't agree with you, mm-hmm. they believe you. And in this case, I think there's some real question as to whether or not the judge believes it.
Now, and I don't know the background on this, and I don't know if you do or not, but when do you make the decision of putting your client on trial? Because there's no doubt there's some prepping work that attorneys give their clients and everything.
When do you decide to put the defendant on?
Yeah, when do you decide to put them on? Because, man, I mean, that's a flip of the coin for the most part, isn't it?
Yeah. So it happens early on normally in the cases as to whether or not there are some cases where as much as the jurors are told that constitutionally you don't have to make any statements and that that can't be held against you because that's one of the jury instructions that you get as a juror. You know, in some cases, that if my client, the defendant, doesn't testify, they're going to wonder why. And they're going to say, if you're truly innocent, you'd testify. Yeah. And so they hold it against him. Right. I mean, it's just human nature. So, you know, many times, so let's talk about, like, let's say child abuse cases or child sex abuse cases. Most of the time, the place that I start at is, why is the child lying? My client comes in and he says he didn't do it, right? Never happened. None of this took place. Then the next thing I say is, okay, I'm going to take you at your word. Why is the child lying about this? Why is it that this particular individual is making up a story that you say has not happened? Mm-hmm. Then we have to get into a good explanation of why that child is lying. And if I can't come up with a good explanation of why the child is lying, then the defendant's going to have to testify. Now, the trouble is that most of the time, the individual that comes to me and tells me it didn't happen has made statements to suggest that some of it has happened, but it's not in context to the point where a crime has occurred. So that's a little bit more difficult. And so the only way that normally those sorts of things are played out is it's between two people. There's normally not video evidence. There's normally not other corroboration about what the defendant is saying is true. And so that's where you run into the issue of, well, now you sort of have to, you're my only witness as to what this took place and whether we can disprove what the other person, the alleged victim, is saying about you. Mm-hmm. And so then you sort of work through the process of trying to stack up those foundational pieces of things to prove that the person that's making the allegation has either a reason to make it up or is just mistaken or is lying. Those are the sort of three categories of things. And then once I get to know my client and I get to know how they're going to react and I get to understand sort of what their responses are to questions, I have a good feeling over time as to how they're going to be in a courtroom and how they're going to be looked at by a jury. And sometimes they're credible. And sometimes I have clients that I believe wholeheartedly, but I think because of speaking in front of people and because of sort of the environment, that they're going to be bad witnesses. And even in those situations where I think it would probably be advantageous for the defendant to speak to the jurors about it, a lot of times I don't, because there's more harm than good that comes of it. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. There are certainly, within the last 18 months, I've done 10 or 12 trials probably. 10 of those have been criminal cases. Three of those cases, the defendant testified. Of those three defendants that testified, they were all found not guilty, but they were also really good witnesses. They were really understandable, they were credible, and the cases were presented by the prosecution that weren't real strong. So it turned out okay. Right. Now, I've also had cases where the defendant has testified where there was just sort of a Hail Mary. You were hoping that their testimony would get you at least to the point where the jurors would consider them not to be guilty. Sure. You know what I mean? And so you don't have as much to lose because you think you're losing the trial anyway. And that's the same conversation that I have with the clients about, I'm really concerned about sort of the way the evidence has been presented to this juror, and I think that you're probably being convicted. So I leave it up to the client sometimes because many times those individuals will want their day in court. That's part of the process for them. They want to be able to get up there and tell their story.
Sure.
And they hope that the jurors believe them. And they also realize that they may not. And then they take that risk. And I always, you know, when you go through an advisement, so the way it works in a jury trial is the prosecution puts on all of their evidence. They rest. So they're done with their evidence. Their case in chief is what it's called. Then the defense can put on their evidence. Well, a lot of times your main witness is going to be the defendant. And so the judge will then give an instruction after the after the people have rested, the judge will give an instruction directly to the defendant. They'll give an instruction to the defendant that they have the constitutional right not to testify, that no one can take that right away from them, that even if I suggest to them that they testify, that they think they should testify, it is their decision. They get all kinds of advice about it. But at the end of the day, the court says to you, you at this moment have to make a decision as to whether you're going to testify or not. And then the defendant does that. And of course, they also ask them, have you had enough time with your lawyer? Have you understood all of the proceedings? Are you under the influence of anything that would give you an inability to move forward with this decision? All of those sorts of things. You're not being forced into it, unfairly forced into making this decision. All of those things are advised, and then the defendant makes that decision. So most of the time, say over half of the time, I'm not sure which way the defendant is going, my client is going to decide at that moment. I've prepped them normally for testimony. Right. I've also prepped them for not testifying. And so, but it's a sort of in the moment decision by them.
Sure.
I've had situations where I think the person's going to testify and they get this advisement and they get really cold feet and they say, no, I'm not going to testify. All right.
Now, do you know every witness the prosecution will put up, and do they know everyone that you're going to call, or can you spring that on them that your defendant is going to?
Yeah, you can't spring anything on the other side in both a civil and a criminal case. It all has to be disclosed, except for rebuttal. There may be some rebuttal evidence that you can put on. So in the case of a civil case, I just did a civil case this week. Case of a civil case, the plaintiff puts on their evidence, they rest. The defense puts on their evidence, they rest. And then the plaintiff, because they have the burden, has the ability to bring in rebuttal evidence. And that may be evidence that the defense doesn't know about and hasn't been disclosed, but is something that's relevant to how the defense has presented their defense in the case, and it's something that you didn't have in your case in chief.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that that may be something that may be really effective for persuading a fact finder, either the judge or the jury, that the defense that was given is not accurate. So that's how the civil case works. It's the same way in the prosecution, because the prosecution has the burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that someone is guilty. So they put their case on first, the defense puts on their case, and then they get rebuttal evidence. And rebuttal evidence can be strange stuff. It can be just odd. I had a criminal case 20 years ago where my client was working for a rental car company, and he was doing paintless dent repair.
Okay.
So he would take the cars from the location where the rental cars were out at DIA. He would take them back to his shop in Brighton, and he would do the repairs and then bring them back. And he never did any repairs on site. He always took it to the shop and brought it back. And so the allegation was is that he was billing for those repairs, but some of the repairs were never actually done and didn't need to be done. Mm-hmm. And so he was charged with a crime, an economic crime relating to it. And it was a big case. It was $300,000-$400,000 of overbillings is what they were suggesting. So in that case, we went through all of the evidence, and my client decided that he had to testify about what he did, how he did it, and explain what the process was. So he did all of that, and the DA basically set him up on about four or five cases that they knew hadn't been moved from the rental car company to anywhere, because rental car companies keep track of the mileage. And
right.
So after he testified on rebuttal, they brought back in a person that keeps track of it, the inventory and also the mileage on the cars. And those four or five cars, he said, yep, I took it to my house, did it, and brought it back. They were able to bring that person in and specifically say these cars never moved. So there is an example of where they didn't disclose any mileage to us, and they really didn't need to until my client had testified, yep, took them to my car, you know, it should have been 25 miles round trip, and the mileage never changed on those cars. That's what killed that particular client.
Wow.
That was an example of where, going through the trial, I kind of said, don't testify. I think we're in pretty good shape. You don't have to. He was one of those guys, though, that wanted his day in court, and he wanted to prove it. And what he did is he set himself up for failure, and he got convicted because of it. So those sorts of situations are super interesting in trials where most of the time, I mean, 95%, 98% of the evidence has to be disclosed and has to be done and dealt with. But there is that rebuttal piece that sometimes you can get away with.
Sure.
Coming back and bringing additional evidence in.
You know, kind of going back to the first of it, and we may carry into this into next week a little bit because there's some other things I want to ask you about. But nothing replaces courtroom experience.
Nothing.
Okay. So what I'm saying is, I mean, this DA may have blown a case, right?
He did. And my impression is that he comes across pretty well in the courtroom, very unflappable, very sort of matter-of-fact kind of guy. But just seeing what I've seen of his demeanor, huge ego, right? And he's not going to lose this case is what his mindset is. He doesn't care about the justice of it all. He's worried about his reputation and winning this case at all cost.
Right.
And he's at the all cost stage.
Sure. So, and like I said, we'll pick this up because I think there's a lot of questions about him declaring a mistrial or whatever.
Yeah.
So if that were to happen, could Rittenhouse be charged again, and would there be another trial?
Yeah. So there's two types of mistrials that can occur. One is a mistrial where it's without prejudice, so that they just have to start all over again, start the whole process over again, set a new trial. Like in Colorado, I've had a number of mistrials over 25 years, and what ends up happening is you generally have to reset the trial within 91 days, and you do it again. And you get the transcripts from the first time that you tried it, and you move it forward. Now, mistrials can happen at all stages of the proceedings. It can happen in the beginning where you're doing your opening statements. It can happen at the end when the jury can't make a decision unanimously. I've had that happen where they come back, they can't make a unanimous decision.
Right.
The court enters a mistrial and you got to try it again. In this case, though, the prosecution or the defense was saying, we want a mistrial with prejudice, so they can't bring it again. And what they were trying to say to the court, and the court may entertain it at some point, is the prosecution is being so unprofessional and so unethical in the way that they're proceeding with this case that we want you to declare a mistrial and as a significant sanction with prejudice so that they can't bring it again.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was really, and you could tell the dynamics of the defense counsel.
Sure.
They were really, I mean, I was laughing because I've been in that situation where you're just sort of holding on to your chair because you want to stand up and say, this is BS, and what they're doing is not right, but you've got to hold it in and let everybody make their record, and it's super hard because in the moment you get pretty upset.
Sure.
And you've got to keep that. It's like playing poker. You know, it's one of those things where you just got to keep your wits about you, and you can't do that in the first time out.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. All right. Well, once again, we always say, nothing takes the place of experience, and we've talked about this many times. Trial tested, trial ready, Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. So hopefully you never need it, but I'm going to tell you, if you have any kind of legal need in this area of criminal law, personal injury, things, give Kevin a call, and he'll be glad to help you out. Kevin, as always, our time's too short. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks again for being with us for Legal Talk. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Don't go anywhere. Dr. Ben coming up next.
Call now for a free consultation with Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886, or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's FLESCH, fleshlawfirm.com, a proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5 to 6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where a reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DOR, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Hi, this is Chris Kane with 303roofer.com. If you're looking to put on a new roof because of hail, give us a call at 303-390-1382. We'll give you a cash price, which means you'll most likely get to keep some of your insurance money instead of giving it to us. It's your money, we know that, and we'll price the work accordingly. So give us a call today, 303-390-1382, or go to our website, 303roofer.com.
You're listening to 560 KLZ, your home station.
It's time for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins. Dr. Ben is committed to helping patients find the root cause of their health problems. Increase your vitality to live your fullest life without drugs and surgery.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben Galliard, the show where you get healthy answers to all your health questions. I'm your host, Andy Pate, and we're brought to you by Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and soon to be Denver. Dr. Ben, how are you?
Oh, doing great. Just getting ready to go do some deer hunting up in Wyoming.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about that. Is that coming up? How soon?
Yep. We're heading in a couple hours. So that's a great segue into a lot of people hear about grass-fed meat. Grain-fed, what's the difference? Growing up, I'm from Nebraska, and so most people in Nebraska, they turn their nose up at grass-fed. They're like, ooh, that's tough and everything. But there are reasons why grass-fed beef, the grass-fed meat of any kind, is actually better, and it's having to do with the omega-3s and omega-6s. The omega-3s are those good fats like fish oil and sardines and flaxseed and things like that. And that's actually what happens when you eat a grass-fed animal. They're higher in omega-3s, like similar to even wild-caught salmon versus if you're doing grain-fed, then you're putting in corn and different types of grains, and those are the omega-6s, and those are actually more inflammatory. So the type of meat that you eat can actually affect the inflammation that you're having or not having in your body.
Okay, and is that a big advantage, I would assume, with venison?
Yes, absolutely. Well, here's the thing. If you do go over to Nebraska and shoot that deer that's been hanging out in the cornfield, eating all the leftover corn, it's going to be similar to eating some grain-fed beef.
But you still got to do it because it's eating all your corn.
Exactly. So, yeah, you got to take them down.
That's great. Okay. Hey, folks, really quick here. If you have any health questions for Dr. Ben, just give us a call at 303-477-5600. That's 303-477-5600. I have questions, but yours are better. And just one last thing, folks. It's only a half-hour show, so get your calls in soon. Dr. Ben, I want to ask you something about something that has nothing to do with health, money. And the reason is inflation just hit a 31-year high, so people might think, I can't afford to see an expert about my health right now. All the measurements, the advice, I'll just save money, eat cheap food, and wait till inflation blows over. Well, here's my question. What's more expensive, health now or health later?
Yeah, exactly. I'd put a post up on our Facebook page last week, and basically with that same thought process is that, you know, one of the pillars of somebody's retirement, wealth building, all of that has to be thinking about their health. Because without health, literally, there's all types of different sayings, but literally there's nothing without health. You know, my mom had MS and she was in a wheelchair and it wasn't hardly functioning. And, you know, my dad retired, and that was going to be their retirement. And it was no amount of money could be like, oh, we've got $10 million in the bank, but I'd take nap every day, and I can't get out of my wheelchair, and I'm tired, or whatever it is. There's no amount of money that can overcome that. And so that's what we look at, is to invest now in somebody's health is going to be paying off so much down the road, especially because really, you know, what is retirement and what is the point of wealth and all that? It's about freedom, and the freedom to go somewhere if you want to go there, if you want to jump on a plane, go down to Mexico or go fishing somewhere, whatever you want to do. But without health, there's nothing. I've got a patient, she's over by Scott's Bluff in Nebraska, and 2 summers ago, they went fishing like 17 times. They were out on these lakes and had their little bass boat and just having a blast. This last summer, it was like twice. And each time she basically put her rod down and just sat there and watched her husband. She was feeling that bad. And it's like, really? Is that the point of life, is to just get by? And that's what poor health does to us.
Yeah, and you know, I got to be honest, Dr. Ben, I waste a lot of money when I'm less healthy. And I look at people, I look at all the, even just little things like the clothes they buy, all the supplements they have to take, all the appointments they have to go to, just because they let their health go.
Absolutely. I was at Walgreens the other day getting some Band-Aids or some first aid stuff, and I'm like, what in the world? There was this line of cars literally around the entire building waiting to get through the checkout for the pharmacy. They're, in today's day and age, nobody's working, so they don't have enough people on staff to open it inside. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, everybody has to sit in their car outside waiting to go through. And, you know, one thought is like, well, that stinks. Why won't anybody work inside? But then the other thought is that, how many people, or if you're at King Supers or whatever, you're like, how many people are taking these meds? And you see 20 and 30 and 50 and 60-year-olds, everything in between, and they're just, you know, trudging through the line like, I need my antidepressant, I need my anti-blood pressure lowering medication there, I need my anti-diabetes, anti-this, anti-that. And yet, ultimately, it comes down to, let's fix the why. I was talking on Facebook as well about blood pressure. And I bet 90% of high blood pressure, if we stabilize their blood sugar, their blood pressure is going to go down and they're going to be able to get off of their medication. It's that connected.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's face it. If you don't fix the why, you're going to deal with an awful lot of what's, and the what's are expensive.
Absolutely. I look at it like this. People come in because of symptoms. People don't come in and go, oh, you know what? Somebody one time said that my adrenals aren't working well, and I need some help with those. But I feel great. I've got tons of energy. I can do everything I want to do. I feel perfect. You know, very rarely does somebody take massive action and do something if they feel great. So people come in because of symptoms. They come in because their digestion is off. We had a husband and wife. They drove 7 hours over from Kansas today. It was actually last night. They drove through the night to get here. The people come down from Kansas and Nebraska and Wyoming and up from Denver and all over the place, and they come here because of symptoms. They're not feeling well. Their gut's off. Their brain's off. Their energy's off. Their hormones are off. Whatever it is, and a lot of them, it's multiple is, and they've got lots of things going on. But whatever it is, that's why they're coming in. And so what we look at, though, is not treating the symptoms. You know, symptoms, that's the traditional response to in the medical model to symptoms, is to just give them a thing.
Right, just fix the pain. Make pain go away.
A this for that. Right?
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, oh, my I've got this loud noise behind my car, and just chop off that end of that pipe that's rattling or whatever. And you know, instead of, okay, well, let's replace that muffler and fix the problem. And so that's what we look at, where in medication, in surgeries, even supplements, people are using supplements at that level too. And like, oh, you can't sleep. Well, you better take melatonin. But it's like this, you've got to get to that why. And that's where we take a step back and we look at the systems, not just the symptoms, but we look at the systems and we go, oh, your liver's off, your gut's off, your adrenals are off, you've got a chronic infection, you've got this brain thing going on. Whatever it is, we go through system by system by system. And most people have like five or six or seven or eight systems off, and we fix those systems, and then ultimately the symptoms are going to change.
Okay, and Dr. Ben, that's getting back to the money aspect. Really quick here, folks, Dr. Ben Galliard is our guest from Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins. Their phone number is 970-282-1173, or you can find them at fmcenters.com. And one last thing, folks, you gotta follow them on Facebook. It's F8 Well Centers of Colorado and Tennessee. Dr. Ben, I love your videos on there. But let me just get back to the money question. You see, you talk about people who come in and they've got 6 to 8 systems that are off. I do a show a couple times a week with a guy named John Rush. He's a car guy, okay?
Yep.
And he has been telling people over and over, right now is not a good time to buy a car. They're too expensive. It's just horrible. You need to make your car last. And here are all the things you do to make your car last. And it's all preventative stuff, boring stuff, right? It's not exciting yep. stuff like getting a new flashy thing. This is what we're talking about with health. If people don't fix those 6 to 8 things, they are going to be spending a ton of money keeping the pain Absolutely. Down, keeping the problems Absolutely. Down. And that's kind of what I'm getting to right now is because our dollars aren't going as far. Maybe we need our bodies to be a lot more efficient.
Yeah. Well, and I'll just put this out there. We haven't changed our prices in probably 3 years. So even though there's inflation, we're still using the same pricing structure. But
can you say what it costs to go in for a check? You know, a first time.
So if we try to actually keep it reasonable, because I want to know what's going on first and if I'm going to be able to help somebody. So it's $175, and that includes the exam. Yeah, the exam with the doctor, a brain map, and then we'll sit down and review. The blood work is in addition to that. That just goes straight to the lab. It's a couple $100 on that one. But, for all of that, then we'll sit down and spend another hour and show you exactly where the imbalances are. And that's it. And so that's to get all of this information. I mean, think about this. If you fell down in the shower, got dizzy, and they're like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Well, you better send out the ER. So they, or not the ER, the ambulance before they take you to the ER. And so, the ambulance comes out and then they do a couple CAT scans and an MRI and they see the doctor and they keep you overnight. And all of a sudden it's $20,000 later. And they're like, oh, I think you were dehydrated or whatever it is. And so, for us to be able to get the information that we get for a few $100, it's life changing. And that's really why we want to keep it in that range. Because one, I want to know for sure that patient is motivated, that they're ready, that they've got the support at home, everything, and that they're going to get the results. Cause I don't want to waste our time. I don't want to waste your time either. So it's a process that we go through on everybody, no matter a 12-year-old kid or a 65-year-old lady, everything in between. We've got to go through this process, figure out where those underlying systems are out of balance.
Well, and Dr. Ben, if they don't do that, right now, everybody who's listening has two big costs when it comes to their health, and it's upkeep and emergency. And I think the upkeep part, we don't even consider that a cost. We're so used to buying this list of supplements. We're so used to doing this list of things to account for those pains, these issues, those issues, and so forth. We're so used to spending the money, we don't realize how much we're spending. And we're spending, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll see that. We do Zoom calls with a lot of patients around the country. And I'll see in their behind them, they'll be in the kitchen or whatever, and I'll say, oh, yeah, how much vitamin D are you taking? So they go over to their cabinet, and they open up, and it's like, holy cow, they've got like 40 bottles in there, and they're all just for various things, and they're just taking stabs in the dark. And I'm like, we're going to cut you way back on what you're taking, supplements, medications, whatever it is. As your body gets healthier, you're going to be able to take a lot less. My goal is not to get somebody off of everything, whether that's a medication,
sure,
or supplement, whatever, but it's to get them taking the least amount needed to get the desired result. Because a lot of people, you know, they come in like, oh, I'm on this thyroid medication and I want to get off of that. I'm like, well, I don't know if you're ever going to be able to get off of it, but let's say you have to lick it once a day and you feel amazing every single day. Would you do that? And they're like, yeah, sure, that's fine. I'm like, well, that's great. That's what we want you to do. Feel as good as you possibly can so that you can just do more, be more, and give more. And that's ultimately our goal for everybody that comes through, is because I know that we've got way more in us than what most people are able to put out every single day. You know, we're walking through life. I always tell patients, you know, you're not going to sit back at your last days and go, man, I made it through. And thank goodness I made it. I survived. I barely got through my life. No, we want to look back and go, man, I had a blast. You know, and even just talking about wealth, you know, we don't have to have money to have fun, but you can, you know, even if you don't have a lot of money, you can still enjoy life to a whole nother level. But if you don't have your health, it doesn't matter how much money you have. You know, you look at Steve Jobs and what did, I mean, he had more money than anybody could ever use. And yet, you know, he's gone from this planet because his health was down from the cancer and everything else. So,
well, I think you mentioned something really important here, not just the money that they're spending constantly every day or week or month, that they get so used to it, they don't even know it's going out anymore. It's just part of their budget, but also that they can get to another level in feeling good, in performing well, in living life. Because I got to be honest, Dr. Ben, most of us get to where we don't believe there's another level. I've aged to this point. This is as good as it is because I'm this age. This is normal. And yet it really isn't normal, is it?
It's amazing. And if you could be a fly on the wall and just listen to the conversations over and over. I just talked to a lady today. We're 4 weeks into the program. She lives out by Scottsbluff, Nebraska, and she came in with horrible body pain all over knees and wrists and elbows and all types of things. In 4 weeks, she's like, I don't have any pain. I've got two fingers. She's been a receptionist her whole life, and two of the fingers are still a little sore, but nothing else. I'm like, so if somebody asked you, are you like a, she told you it's fibromyalgia and all that. I'm like, are you fibromyalgia? Are you a chronic pain person? And she'd say, no, I don't have pain anymore. She's down almost 10 pounds. Her energy's up. She's sleeping better. She's in her late 50s and feeling like a different person in only 4 weeks. And that's the amazing part, that people can really see some massive changes. And here's where it starts. And here's some tips for you guys out there to get going with especially the holidays coming up, some things that you can do right now to start reversing some of this aging, some of this damage going on. And the first one is to start working on your blood sugar. Every one of our patients uses a glucose monitor. And even if you don't have a glucose monitor, you've got to start thinking about what is going into your mouth that's going to be affecting your sugar.
Hey, one second before you run on, I want to ask about the glucose monitor, because when I hear words like that, glucose monitor, it scares me. I imagine a million wires hooked up to me, and you'll know if I'm lying. And, you know, it's just going to be this, I don't know, this burden for the rest of my life. Or is it an easy thing to do? What's it like?
Yeah, absolutely. So for years, we had people just do a basic finger prick. So if, you know, grandma had to check her blood sugar, or anybody you've known, you poke your finger, put this drop of blood on the strip, and it goes in there and you check. And you do that before a meal, after meal. Now we've got what they call a continuous glucose monitor, which is what type 1 diabetics use. And we've been able to negotiate with the company and get it available to the masses, to where every 5 minutes you just put this basically a sticker on your arm, and every 5 minutes it shoots over data to your phone, and you can continually watch what your blood sugar is doing. And so it's a super simple process. But I say if everybody in the population would check their blood sugar, 90% of chronic diseases would be reversed or prevented. It is that.
Wow.
I wrote a book on blood sugar, and that's why I did it, because we've seen phenomenal changes over and over and over with that. So here's the
name the book again, sir. Name the book.
Yes, but Blood Sugar Doesn't Lie. You can get it on Amazon, and it's under my last name, Galyardt. But here's the deal.
Okay.
You guys stabilize your blood sugar, and even if you're not going to poke your finger,
even if you're not going to go get a continuous glucose monitor, think about where the majority of calories are coming in. We just posted on this today. So we've got 16% of our calories coming in, an average in the standard American diet, coming in from snacks and different sweets. So 16% of calories. 12% of calories are coming in from what we're drinking. So think about that. That's not milk, and that's not 100% fruit juice. So take out orange juice, take out all those other things, and you've got 12% of calories coming in from what you're drinking. That's the mocha latte, peppermint, whatever thing from Starbucks, 1,500 calories. That's Red Bulls, that's Mountain Dew or Pepsi or sweet tea or whatever it is. And then we've got another 11% from grains and from rice and bread and pastas and all these different things. And so that whole like 40% is going to be driving that blood sugar up all the time. So you've got to start there. One of the easiest things that you can do is not drink your calories. So just for the next 7 days, do this. Don't drink calories, nothing at all. So you can drink water, bubbly water, some unsweetened tea, even a coffee, whatever it is, but don't have any calories in there, whether that's a Red Bull or a sweetened coffee or a sweet tea or anything like that. Do that for 7 days and you will feel different. It's that amazing.
I don't know if my wife could do that. You see, she has displaced her entire bloodstream with mocha latte. And she's very happy, incredibly energetic. I'm kidding. She doesn't. She only has one in the morning, and that's it. Can I ask you, because we're talking about prepping your body, right, for the holidays.
Yep.
I want to talk about prepping our body for something that's huge right now, and that's COVID. Okay?
Yeah.
And I'm not talking pro-vax, anti-vax. I spoke with a guy yesterday, and he's just coming off COVID, and he said it was the worst 2 weeks of his life, and he had been double vaccinated. Meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers used other treatments, had virtually no symptoms. But that's them. Everyone's different. I just want to know, what are the best things we can do to prepare our bodies for COVID, regardless of vaccines?
Yeah, and that's what I try to convey all the time. Is I've got family members that have gone one way and the other, and I don't get into it with anybody. I don't argue. I don't tell them they're wrong one way or another. That's not my place.
Everybody's hey, Dr. Ben, like it. Quick here. Couldn't we just celebrate it work, whatever working for anybody? I mean, if you take a vaccine, it works great for you. I celebrate that. If you use other treatments and that works for you, I celebrate that.
Sure. Well, and here's the thing. I wish that the vaccines were what we thought they were going to be. That is like, oh, great, I have a vaccine, it's good. But what we know is that Johnson & Johnson, they're saying at 2 months you need a booster.
Yeah.
You know, the other two at 6 months, we know that even at 6 months they're down 50% or lower on the effectiveness and all that. And so I'm not saying do or don't, whatever, but what I am saying is that no matter whether you do or not, you've got to have your body ready. You've got to have it prepared, because here's the deal. COVID could be gone in 6 months and we never even talk about it again, but there's going to be another virus. There's going to be more
sure.
bacteria. Things are going to continue to evolve. You know, who knows, what really happened to that virus in the lab in Wuhan, and who else is playing around with germs out there. Whatever it is, you've got to have your body as ready as possible no matter what. And so that's some of the basic things that we look at, is getting good quality sleep. You've got to get your sleep. That's when your body repairs, your immune system regenerates. You've got to be working on your digestive tract and your gut, their microbiome, all that good bacteria and bad bacteria and yeast and all that. That is really, really important to have it in a good range. And
okay, but
on a lot of,
now to do this kind of stuff, though, people are going to do that a lot better if they come to you, you measure them, because it isn't one size fits all, is it?
Sure. I wish that I would say, that's what I sell on late night TV, is the magic, magic one size fits all.
Yes.
Juju berry. But unfortunately there is no such thing. But, when you're talking about sleep, when you're talking about the gut, when you're talking about keeping your blood sugar steady, when you're exercising, I just did a little blurb on digestive tract, and even exercising on a regular basis is really, really good for your gut and your microbiome. We need that continuous activity. You know, so there's all these things. And again, I wish there was just a question I get all the time is, you know, what supplements should I take for COVID or to prevent COVID or any of that? And, you know, I wish there was, again, the magic bullet on there. And I've had some people that have taken every single pill imaginable and still gotten it and were still down for 2 weeks. And then other people that you look at and you're like, man, if you get hit, you're going to die. And yet, you know, they're totally fine. So, you know, it's some of it is chance, because if your immune system is down, if you're a little depleted, if you're tired, whatever, then you might get hit there. But if your body's doing okay and maybe it's seen this type of a virus before and it can activate those antibodies pretty quick, you might be fine with it. So, you know, no matter who you are, what your background, what your lifestyle is, you've got to keep your body strong, and not just COVID, but anything out there, we've got to be ready and prepared to handle the stressors that come at us.
Okay, I'm writing these down. So number one, sleep. If you're not sleeping enough, guess what? COVID's probably going to hit you worse. Number two, your gut. Got to change your diet. And there's a lot of things that go into that. Obviously, the main thing is your sugar imbalance, I would assume, your glucose imbalance. Yep. Number three, exercise. And by the way, what kind of exercise is going to help protect you the most?
Well, there's a difference between exercise and movement. And so a lot of people look at, oh, I take the dog for a walk and it pees here and it pees there. And you're like, oh, is that exercise? No, that's not exercise. That's movement. You go to Italy and people walk 2 miles each day to get to town and buy their dinner and then walk back home. You know, that's not exercise. That's just life. And yet, so exercise is where you get on the stationary bike and maybe you do some sprints or you do a little bit of a HIIT activity where you're doing push-ups against the wall and a few air squats and some different movements like that. So that exercise is a huge piece. The sleep, stabilizing the blood sugar, working on the gut. And then one of the simplest, easiest things you can do is get your vitamin D up. Vitamin D, the research shows if you're over 50 on your levels in the blood work, that you're going to be a lot less likely to get COVID, a lot less likely to go to the hospital, a lot less likely to go to the ICU, and a lot less likely to die.
Hey, really so, quick here. I take plenty of vitamin D and zinc. I've never been vaccinated. Nothing against it. I just didn't need it. And I've never had COVID. I'm fine. I don't know. Now I'm just one person, but it worked for me.
Yep. Yeah. And so then people ask, well, how much vitamin D do I need? And I say, I have no idea. But if you go and get blood work done and check your vitamin D, you want it between 60 and 80 is where the optimal for the vitamin D is, what the research shows. And so if you can get that up there, even the research shows over 50, still way, way better on that. So, you know, these are all those individual things that you need to look at, and everybody is an individual. And that's the great part about medicine, and especially functional medicine, is that we can look at you like you need to be looked at. Get out that magnifying lens and look through every system, every area of imbalance, and not just throw one more thing at you, not just cover up one more symptom. The surgery, the drug, whatever it is, we're going to get to the underlying why and get your life back so that you can do more, be more, and give more.
Okay, so to sum up today, if people come to you at functional medicine centers, they're going to learn individually things that are basically going to save them a lot of money and also make them better prepared to be healthy for life and also for warring off COVID. Sound good?
Absolutely. You guys stay strong out there. Keep that body vibrant, and we'll talk to you next week.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, folks, you've been listening to The Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben Galliard, brought to you by Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and soon to be Denver. And thanks for all of you. I'm Andy Pate. Until next Thursday, be informed, be wise, and be focused on a healthier tomorrow. Take care.
Thank you for joining us for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Contact the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins now by visiting functionalmedicinefortcollins.com or call 970-716-0079. Join Dr. Ben next time right here on KLZ.
The health advice and opinions on this broadcast are those of the host and guests, and do not necessarily represent the views of this station, Crawford Broadcasting Company, its staff, management, or sponsors.